Oh, it's the drone show.
Yeah, new show. We've got it all starting off. This has come about because the Pauls have decided that they want to build a drone. And I said, well, okay, yeah, let's help out. And then, well, why don't we just record what we're doing? So how many episodes this is going to be? No idea. What's it going to do for you? No idea. If you want to build a drone, then dive in. I want to dispel the guru myth around me and drones straight away. I've got more than I've crashed, which is a stat that I'm proud of. But if you want to write in with technical inaccuracies in anything that I say, I'm sure there's going to be a queue for that. So that's not what this is about. This is about I've built them and I've managed to fly them and I've managed to do steady film work with them, and I can help as much as I possibly can. If I get some stuff wrong, I get some stuff wrong. Joining me for the build, Shads. How you doing, bud?
I'm good.
And he's there in the background with his old phantom look that he bought.
It's not a phantom.
It's a
DJI F550.
Oh, so it's not the phantom version.
It's basically their kits that they brought out before they did the phantom, I think.
Mm. How'd you get on with that then?
Actually good. I'm actually much better now that I understand how to fly it properly, how I've set it up, actually balanced it this time, which helps a great deal. And got some footage from it now.
Excellent. I saw the motorcycle little, footage.
Gimbal underneath here.
Superb. So a bit of an old hand, and then a bit of a green boy.
Not just literally because of the background.
Because of the background. But wait, as this is it for you, and this is your first remote control.
Well, it's not my first remote control to anything. Actually, I should have got this down. Hold on.
No, it's fine. Hold on. It looks rather nice. It's mottled. Oh,
I built this.
You built that, good lad.
Years and years and years ago. I was about 12 or something.
So this will be easy then.
Well, yeah, this was a kit though. And I smashed it. You can see the back axle's kind of fallen off.
That's what those things are for. That's why they've got big tires for smashing.
So I have dabbled with this before, but not for many, many moons. But not to the level. I mean, it didn't come in parts like this. It came in quite large lumps that you just kind of clip together. There was no soldering involved in this at all.
But at least you've acquired the hoarding element of building RC vehicles.
I actually had to dig this at my parents' garage.
Oh, good lad. Excellent.
It was kind of like because we talked about this weeks ago that we were going to do this show. And I couldn't really do it till I moved. And I desperately wanted to do something. So I pulled this out of the garage thinking that I might fix it up. And as you can see, I've done absolutely nothing with it.
Right. Okay.
But we'll get there. We'll get there. You've looking forward to this, though. Excited.
You've acquired the do nothing element of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I do that very well.
So
one of my course
I also had a RC car years and years ago, though. A Tamiya one.
Oh, God. Tamiyans. Yeah, superb. I've got two outside that run on nitro. And I went and I drove them up and down on the car park. And they went like absolute stink. I mean, they were brutally fast. And I said to Ellis, yeah, yes, and it's your go. And he said, no, I don't want to go. Not interested. And he won't touch them now because they move too fast. They move faster than he can watch. So, I mean, the thing to start off with is, I mean, I talked you guys out of buying something off the shelf, didn't I?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've explained to you guys why that is, but I bought my intro into the helicopter stuff because I was going to use a proper helicopter to fly and get footage. And I had visions of me being the Whirlybirds from the 1950s and just going anywhere.
I don't know what that is. I'm going to have to Google that. Hold on.
And being able, thanks, man. And being able to fly, it was Saturday morning viewing. And being able to fly this thing 10 miles away and get all the footage I want and bring it all the way back and an endless supply of fuel and all the other crap that goes on in your head that you think you can manage. And actually, it's really bloody hard. And
it's a TV show. Okay.
It's a TV show, yeah. And you got to Google and watch it because it's on YouTube. So, right. But I had this vision of me using this this helicopter to do it. And helicopters are hard. They're really hard. And I mean, I flew it. I managed to fly it and I got to steer it towards me and away from it and all that kind of stuff. But I ended up selling it. And the reason was I was scared to death of crashing it. And I bought one that was a secondhand model that was in a shop and it wasn't cheap. And I took it off and I had the little trainer thing on the bottom of it with the square legs. And the whole time I was flying, no matter how good I got, I was always crapping myself that I was going to crash it. And I went back to the guy that I bought it from, and I said, I'm just constantly crapping it. He said, yeah, fear factor. He said, what you need to do is build your own, because if you build your own, the fear factor disappears. And it didn't, because I built my own. And then one day I'm flying it, and I've realized one of the errors that we'll talk about tonight that I bought underpowered motors. The thing's flying towards me. I thought, I'll give it a little bit of throttle and it'll rise up over me. I've got a GoPro, actually. I'm going to put the footage in the final edit of this. And I thought, I'll give it a little bit of throttle. It'll just rise up over my head and fly past it. It'll look super cool. And as it was coming directly towards me, I added a bit of throttle and it never bloody moved. And it flew straight at my head. I ducked out the way, and it smashed into the ground, and it completely wrecked one of the spars. And I was besides myself, because this is, you know, I've crashed my first build. And when I got home, I ordered a new spar. I refitted the spar 30 minutes after it arrived, and 30 minutes after that, I was flying it again. And that was the point that I lost the fear of flying it. So I would say, you have to build your own just because you lose the fear factor that goes with it. And Paul, you bought yours and built it.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you find yourself with the fear factor? And
sorry, what Paul are we talking about?
Which Paul are you doing?
Well, either, because I mean, you've done the RC car with Paul Wheatley, or you've got the 550 with you, Paul. So,
well, from my perspective, I was 12, so I didn't have the fear factor about anything.
Okay.
So I just ran it into curbs and hoped for the best because my dad would fix it. So, right. It's not quite like that anymore.
So Shads, go on, take us through yours.
Yeah, so mine was last year when I was 55, 6. So I built it up. Took me a couple of days to put everything together. There's a lot of soldering involved, and set up all the motors, balanced the props, did all the stuff that you read about that you have to do, and then took it out. The first time I took it out, it was okay, except that I found that the controls on the transmitter I have seemed to be reversed for some reason. I couldn't work out why.
Yeah, you hadn't reversed them.
I hadn't set them up correctly. That's basically what it boils down to. So once I figured out how that's supposed to work, I then took it out again, tried it again. And I thought, okay, now I've got that working. This has got things like return to home and failsafe. So I sent it off over the fields where I used to live, and tried the failsafe, which is basically turning the transmitter off. The helicopter then goes up to about 20 meters, flies back above to where you turned the helicopter on, where the GPS first got its location. And then it comes down and lands. And I thought, that's perfect. Brilliant.
Okay. Oh, it did it?
Oh, it did it. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a few people have had those where they just fly away, though.
No, this worked. So I was my confidence was really high at that point. So I thought, okay, now I'm going to do some, you know, real fun trick stuff. So off I go, fly it low across the field, raise it up, bring it back. But one of the things tell you that the F550 that I have here from DJI, the baseboard is the distribution board. So all the power goes through that board to the motors and all the electronics. And I'd mounted some metal plates, well, aluminium plates underneath to hold the landing gear, and did all that and looked perfectly okay. I was a bit nervous because, you know, I didn't want to short anything out. But every time I was landing manually, it would land pretty heavily. So after a while, obviously something had happened that when I sent it off across the fields and then brought it back again, I was coming back pretty quick. And I thought, oh, that's going a bit quick. So then I'll slow it down. And nothing happened. It just carried on. And then eventually it just plowed itself into the ground. Caught fire. Caught fire, yes, because it basically...
Shorts on the alley plates.
What had happened is that the baseboard had shorted out, which screwed everything up, and then it just crashed. And because it had shorted out, and there's a lot of power in these batteries, the actual board itself caught fire. So the only way I could get the fire to go out, because I was blowing it, picked it up, blowing the flames out. I should disconnect the battery, shouldn't I? Yes. And it was trash. Three of the arms it snapped off. One of the motors bent. Props broken. Took it back, feeling a bit sorry for myself. And then moved to where I am now. And a couple of weeks ago, I got all the bits out because I ordered all new parts for it and put it back together. And it's actually really flies really nice now. I'm taking over the just outside where I live here, set it up, and it takes off and it will sit and hover now, which it didn't do before on its own. Or it was always like drifting a little bit stuff. Yeah, it's good. The only thing I've got now is the battery only lasts 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things to start off with, really, is to think about what you want to use it for. Jim's made a point here in the chat, and I quite fancy building a mini drone just to play with. And you can do that. That's dead easy to do. The frame costs are very cheap. I mean, some of you may have seen, I tried to make one out of two boomerangs that I got from Toys R Us. So the frame costs there were 99p each. And I joined them together to try and make a quad. And the problem I had was it was a bit of flexy when I started off. So if I can figure out a way of making it a bit more rigid, I'm going to get that flying at some point. Your initial costs, though, really come more from things like your transmitter. So I've got a Spectrum DX7. Now, that'll hold 20 models. So yes, it's expensive. It's. I think if you go to a model shop, they'll charge you about 240 quid for this. You can get them for about 130 to 140 online. But that'll hold 20 models. So this flies every single rig I've got in here that flies, and it also drives the motorized rig, the camera that I've got that runs on the wire that I use for work. So there is, you know, that's a one-off cost. And also then your battery charger may cost you 160 quid. But that, if you buy a good quality battery charger, that'll last you for forever, probably. So your setup costs to go straight in. I mean, let's, because I gave you guys a shopping list of what we were going to build from, and how much did it come to for you, Paul Wheatley?
That entirely depends. Is my wife listening to this show? Do we know?
Well, unless you tell her that we're making it, no, but.
I think all in all, when you took the controller in and everything like that, it was about £600. But as you rightly say, when you take out the battery charger and the controller and everything like that, probably by the actual drone itself was about kind of £350, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon I can build a frame and an APM control board and all the electrics and motors for under £250 quid. Mm-hmm. If I buy the right frames, or if I build my own frame. I mean, I'm building one that's a very long quad frame that's going to hold two GoPros, front and rear, on a rail system. And the frame for that is made out of an A3 piece of carbon fibre, and that cost me 30 quid online. Mm-hmm. And I just took it outside in my bandsaw and cut it up, made two plates, and that's it. That's the core of it, so.
I think as well, if I'd known what I was looking for, because I just kind of went straight off your shopping list, and I know you probably made it quite easy for us by kind of lumping the stuff together so it came from particular retailers.
Yeah.
Whereas if I knew what these things were, which we'll learn during this show, I might have a little bit more confidence to go out and do a bit of shopping around, check on eBay and things like that. I could probably reduce the price. But given that we were buying lumps from Hobby King and Unaman Tech Shop and all that kind of stuff, they probably did come out a little bit more expensive than they needed to.
Yeah, no. A lot of it's fairly cheap. The things that really mount up are motors and ESCs, really. But you're better off buying good quality ESCs because they don't burst into flames. But, I mean, a decent Spectrum controller or a decent Turnergy controller or the Grantner controllers or a Futaba, any of those will hold 20 models and they're fine. And the other thing you can do with these as well, which is brilliant, is that they all come with this little socket at the back, and you can go and get simulators then that you can run on your Mac or your PC. You need Parallels if you want to run it on your Mac, but you can actually fly virtual aircraft, and the handling characteristics are excellent. I've got it's my only pure enjoyment is I've got a Vampire foamy over there, and that flies like the wind, and it screams. The turbine on it's fantastic. And I thought, before I take it out, I'm going to have a go with one of the autopilot systems and I plugged it in, and I actually flew the plane before I took it out and flew it. And the first time I took it out and flew it, I flew it perfectly fine until I realised it wasn't quite as high over the trees as I thought it was. So that's the second one I've got over there at the moment, not the first. I mean, what are you guys planning on doing with this? I mean, what's the end game, if you like?
So I like the idea of the videoing. I like the idea of kind of taking it out for a walk or something like that, go out for a walk on a Sunday, and being able to do like nice panning shots of the family and kind of over landscapes and things like that. And I also just kind of want to play with it. But I think the main thing for me is the building it element. I was quite kind of interested in them to begin with like seeing the videos that you guys had done. But now I'm just really, really excited about building these things. I think that's half the fun for me with these projects is the build. Probably more than half.
The build's cool. I mean, the one thing as well that you can do, and I get Morgan involved in this, because this is the one that I used to make the carnival video that you guys saw on online. And this is fairly hefty. I mean, this is nearly 3 kilos in weight. And it holds, it's got a brushless gimbal here for holding the GoPro. It's got a 6-cell battery on it, and it's a big 6-cell battery that'll last. I mean, that'll fly roughly 30 minutes based on the weight. And it's huge. It's 4,000 milliamp hours. Bryony actually built that.
Right.
And you're saying, well, okay, yeah, what did she do? She built all of that. So it was just a case of sitting down with them saying, right, okay, here you go, Bryony. That goes there, that goes there. And I gave her a little electric screwdriver. These are 20 quid from B&Q at the moment. They last forever. I've only charged this twice and I've had it 5 months.
Wow.
And they're brilliant. You just, off you go. And it's got a little light on the end and you can forward and reverse. And building those with a little set of sockets so that you've got the Allen key stuff, that zips together fairly quickly. And Bryony and me built this in about a day. But mm-hmm. she did everything on it. Absolutely everything. I just held stuff for her, helped her. I was a third hand, that was all. Now, but the thing is, you look at that and you say, right, well, that's a stereotypical quadcopter, I think. It's I like these because they're actually asymmetrical. So if you're starting off, the worst thing I think you can do is buy a crosscopter where you've just got four and it looks the same no matter where you stand. You need to have something that makes it look different. And the beauty of this is when you see it as a black silhouette against the sky, you can see that it looks completely different. You can tell which is forward and which is back.
Cool.
Now, this one here is exactly the same frame. It's no different. But I would suggest that these two quadcopters are as different as you can be. This one is a fast fly. So the types of motors that are on it are very high KV. They're 1400 KV motors, which means that they'll do 1400 RPM. It's got 9-inch tri-blade pops on it, which means that they spin really quickly and get an awful lot of acceleration, whereas this one has got 12-inch carbon fibre props on with a much greater pitch, and it's also got slow-fi motors on it, so they're only 340 kilovolts as opposed to 1,400 kilovolts for these.
Kilovolts?
Yeah.
KV. Volts. Hang on a second.
Go on.
1,400 kilovolts?
It says it's 1400 kV. I presume the kV is kilovolts.
That's a lot of volts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one, I can run that with a 6-cell battery, but I'll only get around 10 minutes of flight time out of a 4000 milliamp hour battery. This one, I'll get in the region of 30 minutes out of the same battery.
30 minutes at that battery.
Yeah.
So I think the ones that we bought for this project, you reckon about 8 minutes? Is that right?
For a base, I mean, what size batteries did you end up buying? The 2000s?
The one on the shopping list. I'm just trying to find it on the list here.
We'll put the list in some show notes or something. This one here is the same kind of motors, but actually this one has got 15-inch props as opposed to 12-inch props with a very high pitch angle, and I've had 40 minutes out of that.
Right.
The same battery.
2,650 milliamp hours.
Yeah, so that's a basic battery. You can get those for probably in the region of, what did you pay for those? 30
£32 and 17 pennings.
You might get those just a little bit cheaper somewhere else, but, I mean, generally speaking, you'll get about 8 to 10 minutes out of that quite comfortably. Yeah. KVs per volt, kilovolts, thank you. It's not kilovolts, it's... Darren's correcting me. The RPM per volt.
Right.
Okay.
It's basically how fast the motor will spin per volt supplied to it.
Yeah, so this one's 1250 kV. So that'll spin very quickly, as opposed to this one, which is a 960, which will spin a little bit slower, as opposed to this one, which is a 690, which will spin even slower. And then the 340s will spin very, very slowly per volt. So... If you want a steady filming platform, what you prefer to do is have lower KV motors and bigger props. So there's an awful lot more torque, if you like, in the lower KV motors that will allow you to then spin the props slower, and then you put very high pitches on them. So typically, if you buy a prop, you'll get something like that, which is a 4-5 pitch, 4.5 degree angle. So that one will spin fairly quickly at 12 inches, and you'll get the same efficiency if you buy a 3 prop, but you probably get a slightly less battery out of it.
So I'm just reading through the thing on Hobby King for the battery that we bought, and I can't see anything that talks about KV. So how do you? Is there a way to work that out if the battery doesn't actually state that?
Which motor did you buy?
The motor.
What?
Right. Okay. Sorry, I'm looking at the batteries.
No. It's the motors that you want to look for KV.
Ah. Right. Okay. That's my role in this show, is to ask the stupid questions. That's my role in most shows, actually. Coincidentally. I was a little bit disappointed when neither you giggled to begin with.
Darren's coming on the next episode, which is just meant to be a pilot to start off with, the mechanical stuff. But
Darren, pilot.
Darren's coming on, he's saying, basically, it's how fast the motor will spin per volt supplied to it. And echoing what I've just said here, slow motors, lots of torque, spin bigger props and carry heavier payloads.
So the motors that you
fly slower
need to buy are 530 kV, which is this one here. I'll just hold that up to the camera.
There you go. So that's doing 530 RPM per volt.
And that's we've got one of these for each of the props.
Yeah. So if you buy a higher volt motor, so you've bought what cell? 3-cell or?
Cell? I'm going to have to go back to that tab now. Right. Okay. Hold on.
Good job you're organized, isn't it? I can't even remember what I asked to buy.
That one is somewhere in here. The last one that I've not clicked yet. So, here we go. Right. So it's a 6-cell, 6S cell.
Yeah, that's why you paid more. So, I mean, the models that we're going to build would fire quite happily on 3-cell batteries, but you're only going to get, at that, you're going to get 11.1 volts, and a 6-cell, you're going to get 22 volts. Okay. So you get higher spin rates out of those per volt than you'll get with these ones here. You can stick a 6-cell on these if you want, but it's... The thing is, it'll just whiz. I mean, Darren has seen the one that I've got, the one that I've just shown with the 1400s on it, and one of the things he said as soon as I flew it was, God, that's fast. And basically, when it flies, it's nearly vertical because it's pulling through the air. The others are
one of the things you can do is, because I'm using these 3S batteries, 11.1 volts.
Yeah,
because you run two of them in parallel, then you get longer usage, flight time
connect,
with the same voltage.
But you either connect in series or in parallel, and that'll give you either longer flight time or greater power to the motors.
In parallel, it's more amps or longer flight times.
Longer flight times.
In series, it will double the voltage.
Yeah, so you'll be effectively 2 3-cells will be running a 6-cell.
So
and
is that
you've got to be careful that your motor and more particularly your ESC will cope with the higher voltage.
So does that mean basically that on one of those, it'll fly faster, but not for as long if it's in series. Is that right?
It depends how big your battery goes on it. And that's the thing is generally at a certain point, you'll find that I've got an 8,000 milliamp hour 3-cell battery, and mm-hmm. I've got 5,000 and I've got a 2,400. And actually, I get a little bit more, but proportionally, I would say I probably get about the same amount of flight time. I don't get huge amounts longer with the 8,300 as I do to the 2,006 because they're so much heavier. So you'll probably get at 2,600, you'll get, say, you get 8 minutes flight time. You might only squeak up to 9 with the 5,000 or 10 with the 1,000, and you might only get up to around 13 minutes, 12 minutes with the 8,300 because of the weight of the battery going up.
Okay.
I mean, this thing's £100 for that battery there. That's a 4,000 milliamp hour 6-cell. But if I bought a 6,000, say, or a 10,000, the amount that I'll pay won't give me a significantly amount longer flight time.
It's not proportional. It's inversely proportional because of the weight. Is that right?
It's not inversely proportional, but you will only get percentages greater. You won't get double because you double the battery.
I see what you mean. Yep. Okay. So, is there any particular battery to? So the connections at the end there. That's a particular type of connection, isn't it? Because the battery in my remote control car, much as given that it's about 20 years old, there's absolutely no chance it's going to work anymore. But it's got a different connection in the end. So I assume like everything, there's just different proprietary connection technologies.
Well, it's a different type of battery for a start. So this is lithium polymer, and you've bought lithium polymers, LiPos. But what you've got in there in your car is probably a NiCad. A lot of cars still run on NiCads because of the impact issues.
Right. Okay.
If you puncture the sleeves on these, then you run the risk that they will burst into flames. And if you charge them, never leave them in a room on their own charging. Always put them down beside you. Charge them up while you're doing something in that room, because this one's really good because it's a brand new battery. You can see it's really, really square, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But the more cylindrical they look, the more puffy they get in appearance, then the more you want to think about getting rid of them. And I've got one over there. I'll show you next week. It's a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, and it's very ovoid. It's got very, very puffy. I still use it, but I don't leave it on its own when it's charging. People say, okay, well, you put them in this fire retardant bags and that stops it. Well, the only problem that you've got is you don't actually see the battery when it's charging if it's inside the bag, and you're probably better off just paying attention to them. You can get battery alarms. So your battery alarm will fit on the end here, the balancer. And the battery alarm, typically you want to, if you're better off getting the adjustable battery alarms. I got one that wasn't adjustable, and I flew one of my quadcopters and it fell out of the sky. It ran out of charge. And as it hit the ground, the alarm went off.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what is it? I think the battery alarm just kind of says, by the way, you've only got about 5% left or something.
Yeah, it doesn't give you a percentage. What you do is you say, right,
I'll... Battery alarm, I think.
Yeah. What that does for you is it basically tells you volts per cell and then the cumulative voltage of your battery. So you don't really want to drop below 3.5 volts per cell when you're flying it.
Okay.
That'll keep your battery at about 20 to 25%. And just like your computer battery, it doesn't change anything. It's the same idea. Your computer battery shouldn't discharge all the way, and you shouldn't let it, if you want to store it for long term, you shouldn't let it go below 40%, something like that. But 25% for a discharge and a recharge is fine. And these things as well get very badly puffy and rounded if you over discharge them too quickly, or if you let them go too low anyway. And then if you try and charge them too quick as well, they do it. But the charger that I've got that I said to you to buy is one that's it's got a limit on it. So if you've got 2-cell batteries, you can put the charge in quicker. If you've got slower, if you've got 6-cell batteries, you can put the charge in quicker.
Yeah, I think I've lost my charger. That's something that I don't remember seeing when I moved house.
Oh, dear. Not cheap either.
Maybe I didn't buy it, actually. I'll look into that after the show.
Go on, Paul. Were you going to say something there?
Yeah, I was going to say, because this is a charger that I bought when I bought the F550. And this is the one that was recommended to me by the hobby shop here in Switzerland where I bought it. So this has, it can charge lots of different types of cells. Has a nice digital display. And
well, the balancing board is the key part of that.
Yeah, exactly. It does the balancing and it monitors and does all sorts of other things as
well. So just hold up the green board there. So that's a good one because it's got lots of slots for you. Now you've got basically there's Thunder Power balancer is a completely different size from the rest of the world, if you like, almost. Thunder Power are very, very good batteries, but they've got these proprietary connections on them. The other problem that you get is that your alarm won't fit on them, and also the voltage testers won't fit on them. So you're better off buying Turnagy or Zippo or those kind of things that have got the more universal, in inverted commas, balancer on them. Is it the JHT, is it, or the JT something connector? Those are the ones to buy, definitely.
JHT,
because they've got the one that will work with your balancer and your battery alarm and all that.
What's the balancer? What does that do?
The balancer makes sure that each of the cells are charged evenly. So in this battery, if you were to cut it open, which is ill advised, it's a 6-cell battery. There are 6 pieces inside here that charge separately.
Right. Okay.
And they dispel separately. And the idea is that the balancer. When you charge it helps to balance the charging process. But you can also power things off this as well. So one of the things that we'll talk about is FPV later on in the series, where we've got the idea to actually see what it is that we're filming on the hand controller as we're doing it. That's really cool. But you're going to need power for your brushless gimbal, and you're also going to need power for your FPV system to send and transmit stuff back. And that's probably going to be 3-cell, more likely than not. If you've got a choice on anything, always buy an ESC that will be 3-cell, because you can get little 3-cell batteries that are 1,000 milliamp hours, and they're perfectly good enough to run a gimbal and an FPV system for up to 40 minutes, perhaps an hour. But they only cost a fiver. And then you know, try to chuck them away once they start to get puffy.
Okay.
So the build that we went for then was to go for a basic frame. Which frame did you end up buying?
So it's the TI65B01. I think Paul's put a link in the chat room.
Excellent. We'll put some show notes out for this, definitely, because we made a shopping list. And it's a foldable frame, because you said you wanted to take it out on... on days out, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. That's one of the main reasons I want it. Is to take nice videos of that. So I wanted it to be able to fold and pop in the car and things like that.
So this one, is the same frame. Built up. Well, that's the Taro. Taro make great frames. If you want to build one, then that's good. But the one thing with this is it's got the ability to just close the some cups there, and you can make it quite long thing. You do get ones that break this way as well, so that they go down towards the stand, and they're quite space efficient, if you like, as well.
The stream just caught up there. That looks like the one that we're using.
I think that's the one. Yeah, but that's a foldable frame. The only problem we got is that it's as long as the propellers are that stick out.
Right.
But,
okay.
But the good thing about that one is you can stick up to a 15-inch prop on it. I think you can actually get a 16-inch prop on it. So. The motors that you've got, you can power up to 19-inch props on those, with those motors.
Yep. These are the props that we've got.
What size did we buy in the end?
They 12. Are 12 by 45, so I assume that's 12-inch.
Yeah, I mean, those things are about £3 a piece, for a pair.
With the ones that we got were £6, but yeah. Probably get them.
Yeah, I always buy those in pairs. You can buy pull and pusher props, but if you buy them in pairs, they're usually matched for balance and things like that. You've got two that are black there, but there's your black option one here, but this one isn't going to show because it's green. This one's fluorescent green, but that's a really weird effect. Look at that. There we go. The InvisiProp is easily the best one that you should buy. And then there's this one's actually fluorescent orange. And I tend to put, when I first started, I put these on the front and I put the greens on the back, and then I could tell orientation a bit better.
But, sorry, I've just seen that on the live stream now. That is quite cool.
That is really cool, isn't it? The InvisiProp.
But that's the NSA prop.
NSA prop. That they use. That's the one.
By the way, in the kit, these pieces here, which hold the motors onto the arms.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
They've got anodized clamps. Yeah. And we've got...
you love the sparkly, don't you, Paul?
Orange orange and blue. And I guess that, because there seems to be more orange than blue, so the blue ones must be for the front.
Yeah, I think the one thing you've got to realise is if the thing is hovering with some ground in the background or some trees, then you'll see the colours. Once you get it into the sky, sort of 30 or 40 metres maybe, you might actually still see the colours. But once you get beyond 50, the whole thing just turns into a silhouette anyway, which is why I think I prefer to see the asymmetrical frames rather than the symmetrical stuff, because it's a lot easier to see.
My DJI actually has two of the arms are red, which are the front ones.
Fronts, yeah.
But I also have, there's a flashing LED, which I put on the back. Which is, you can see that flashing quite a ways.
You can get flashing LEDs from Maplin, and they'll cost you virtually nothing. I think they're less than £1. And they just run into a battery pack that runs off a AA battery. And the one thing I did with my, I've got a hexcopter up here, but that has actually got, you know, the solder that you buy that's already pre-coiled and you just pull it out of the tube?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tube actually takes a AA battery very easily, and I ran a bit of cable up it, and I put the flashing LED on the end. So when you actually shove the cap on with the LED, it makes connection with the battery, and then you just slide them up there because it's the same diameter as the pipe. It slides up the arm of the quadcopter. And it flashes pretty well. It's not bad at all. You can buy LED lighting kits. This one here has...
do want to know where the front is.
Trust me. You'll answer that question on week three.
Although there is...
But this one's got an LED lighting system in it. So basically I've got white to the front and I've got red to the rear. And then I've got on the inside back, I've got port and starboard in red and green. So... I can tell which way around it is. But you will want to know. And the other thing that one of the things that the APM board's got that you purchased is the ability to do simple mode, which means that you can fly it. And basically, once you've plugged the battery in, it knows which direction it's in. So then you can spin it round and the controls will never change. So effectively, you could put it into a rotational spin. You can do yaw. And you can send it away, flying away from you in that yaw, and it'll fly away in like a spiral as it goes. It's super cool mode. It's really cool. But it's the orientation that it was in when you plug the battery in, not the orientation that it's in when you switch it on. That's the thing to remember. Any more questions then, chaps?
I just want to get stuck in.
Yeah. I think what we're going to do is we've had a basic conversation there about it. I think we've all agreed that we want something that's going to fly reasonably slowly. The frames that you've got, you can get up to 16-inch props on those. And the thing to think about with those is the pitch. So when you buy them, you'll see 12 by 4.5 or 12 by 4.5, and that's the angle of the pitch. So 4.5 is fairly shallow. The ones that I showed you here, those are 7s. So that's a 15 by 7 prop. So it's got a lot more cut into the air, if you like. So the angle, if you like, of the pitch of the prop it grabs the air more. So 4.5, it grabs it less. 7, it grabs it a great deal more. So you want to go for longer props with greater grab if you've got slow RPM motors or low KV motors. If you've got high KV motors, then you're quite happy to use 3.8s or 4.5s, smaller stuff. And then... you get a lot more zip out of a tri-prop at 4.5 than you will out of a two-bladed prop at 4.5. So these are both the same. They're both 4.5s. This is a 12-inch. That's the Invisiprop. That's the other one. So this is a 12-inch, and this is a 9-inch. I think it's an 8-inch, actually. But a 9-inch tri-prop will do the same thing as a 2-prop. The thing that you'll find that's different is when these, when the two-bladed props run, you get a tiny amount of vibration from that because they lurch a little bit. When you get a three-blade, they seem to spin a lot more smoothly.
Okay.
So you don't get as much vibration. And one of the things...
But you get the same lift, though.
Exactly the same. So a 9 will probably eat your battery a little bit more than a 12-inch two-blade will, but not enough to worry about, and you'll get a much smoother flight. When you get your APM board, have you all got your APM board? You've got 2.6s, which is built for the multicopters.
What's an APM board?
That's the controller board, this thing here.
Hold on. APM. I've got a packet here that says APM 2.6 in it. I've not opened it yet.
Right, there you go. So Paul's got his APM board. That thing there is the controller. That's the brain of your helicopter. Effectively, if you could, and all the motors were to spin at equal amounts, then when you apply throttle, the thing would lift up and it would be perfectly stable. But these things are never going to run that well. They're purchased. I mean, they cost you, I think, £13, £14 for the motors each. So at £14, they're not going to be producing things that are that high precision. And that thing will control the RPM on each of those through the ESCs and will make sure that the thing flies stably.
ESCs?
ESCs, electronic speed controllers.
Okay. Is that another little dealie that we've bought?
Yeah, so you should have them. I told you by the 40s.
That's how you connect your motors to the car.
So that's this thing here.
Okay.
Have you got ESCs?
I'm just trying to find the tab with the ESCs.
You've categorised it already, haven't you?
What do they look like?
They
have little resistors in the end.
They're little blocks, and they've got connections at either end, two on one end and three on the other.
Ah, is that these things?
No, that's the power distribution board, Paul.
Okay, right. Learning all the way.
So have you got a packet that's got these things in it?
The video is a little bit behind. I can't see.
No, it's okay. So it's just under the prop there. You'll see this block. And there is little capacitors on it, but it's got a 2 on the outside and 3 on the inside. The 3-1 connects to your motor, and the 2 connects to your battery via your power distribution board.
Huh.
The list did have ESCs on it. I'm sure it did.
I can't see. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I think that's the video just got up.
They came from Hobby King. 40 amp blue series.
Is that these things? Speed controller.
Those are them, yeah. Now, those are 40 amps. So, basically, they're more than you'll need. But if you go for higher cell batteries, so 6-cell battery, you'll need a 40 amp. With a 3-cell battery, you can get away with a 20. But if you've got a 6-cell battery, you'll need a 40. And also, if you've got higher, you know, bigger props, that puts more load on the ESCs as well, so you're better off going up for 40. You're always better just slightly over specifying on your ESC. The other problem that you've got is when your motors and your ESCs heat up. So this thing here, the Emax that I had before, that was my problem. Was when I flew it, it wasn't powerful enough once it had heated up to then respond. It's the big and the short of it. Typically speaking, if you want to build a quad and you want to get your own stuff, and you want to build a fast fly like the one that I showed you earlier on here, take all of your components and work out what the weights are, and then on your motors, if you buy them, a lot of the places will give you a thrust value, and the thrust value is based on lift of weight. So it'll say the thrust of this motor is 750 grams. So that's basically what that motor will manage to pick up. Now, obviously, if you're going to build a quadcopter that's going to weigh 2.5 kilos, 750 gram motors are going to just about pick it up. And that's the problem that I had with these, is that they actually picked it up fairly easily, But the problem is, once you'd flown it and they'd got hot, when you wanted to do throttle blips and just add a little bit of air or something like that, then they didn't respond. They basically just flew into the ground. So that's what caused the failure. Once you've got the entire weight of your frame, plus your battery, plus your motors, plus everything that you want to put on this thing, including the propellers, you would like to have 3 to 4 times the thrust of the total weight of your quadcopter. That'd be perfect. At least double, but 3 would be great. So with this thing here, that weighs, total weight, it weighs just over 1.8 kilos, but each of those motors can lift up over a kilo.
Ooh.
So I'm well over the 3 times suggestion.
Yeah, I have a question, Ewan, on the autopilot.
Yep.
Because on the list that you say, external compass.
Yeah, it's up to you.
I see on here, there's you can get the board, and then you have a power module, GPS module, telemetry kit.
So basically, I got you to buy a basic board, and the basic board will give you the ability to stabilize flight, and that is it. Okay, so if you want to put in the mission planners and you want it to fly a specified route that you've predetermined, you can turn it with a laptop, plug your APM board in, and then from that, it will use the GPS that's on it to find out where you are. And you can say, right, okay, I want you to go here, 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 and here, and it will fly that route. Or you can tell it to fly that route, but point to a single destination. So you can stand in the middle of that circle, and the camera, the camera will always point at you as it goes around you on that path and then lands. You can set your home point, so if you fail to make contact with the device, the thing will come back and land. But you've got to make sure that you set, wherever you take that to the field to fly it, you've set the home position before you start, because one of the things that people get as a problem is they forget that they've got another location. So when the thing loses destination, it then just flies off to try and get to the other destination and probably runs out of power halfway through.
Actually, in the FI50 I have here, it's using a NASA M version 2, and that's the DJI autopilot. And one of the nice things about that one is that it's it has software that works for the iPhone and iPad. So I have the ground control software for the iPad.
Yeah.
And I have a Bluetooth extender, 2.0 megahertz data link, works with a Bluetooth, that I then sit next to my iPad. The iPad connects to this via Bluetooth, and then this connects to the quadcopter. So I haven't actually tested it yet, but it does, as I can say, it's there's a free app on the iPad that makes it work.
Yeah, I mean, there's no end of telemetry that you can get to send back. I know Darren, when he goes flying with his, he comes back and he just plugs his board in and he downloads all the telemetry of where he's flown, and it creates a path and shows the altitude that he was at. It shows the amount of voltage that was in the battery or being consumed at the time that he did it, etc. There are no end that you can add to it. The basic board that you've got will get you started, but you can add GPS to it, you can add a telemetry unit to it, you can add a compass to it, but it comes basically with a barometer and a gyroscope and an accelerometer.
So you don't have to replace the board, you can just add stuff to it.
Yeah, if you look on it, you'll find that there's loads of sockets on it. So you just put your GPS. I've got 4 or 5 GPS units here that I can plug in to any of the boards that I want. And you don't need to set it up. You just plug it in, basically, and it knows then it's got a GPS. But all it'll do, when we put the APM software on and link it up to your PC, what you'll see then is that you'll get a stabilization mode. So when you pick it up, the gyroscope and the accelerometer will know which way you're tilting, and you'll get a three-way visualization on that up here. If you've got the GPS on it, it'll go to the GPS coordinates. Once it's got 2, and it'll do an altimeter if it's got 3, and that'll be you then set with GPS if you really want to do the GPS flying. It's up to you. Beware, because even at hobbyist level, there's extreme controls when it gets to the commercial level, but even at hobbyist level, it is illegal for you to allow it to fly on its own without the option of manual control.
Is there also rules around, I might have got this wrong, but around built-up areas and things like that? You have to be so far away from built-up areas and things like that.
Yeah, you shouldn't fly it in built-up areas at all without an exemption from the CAA, which you won't get unless you're a commercial flyer, and even then you possibly won't get it. And you shouldn't fly it near people either. I mean, the one thing that the CAA are really hot on for both hobbyists and for commercial is the last thing that you land in it on a person. Because, I mean, I have on me here, I don't know if you can see that, but I've got a nice little scar there across. I've got one over the back of my shoulder blade here. I've got one on this arm as well, where I had my hexcopter when I first built it, and I was banging the throttle up and I couldn't get it to respond. And I left the throttle up and I unplugged it and replugged it in, and it started and it jumped out at me. And the problem was it was imbalanced. So instead of just going straight up and hitting the ceiling, it actually flipped towards me. And I got one hand up, but I had, and they're permanent scars. They're not going anywhere. These things are lethal once they get going. And if you get the 17-inch props that are carbon fibre, they don't break. So they just, and they are sharp, and they are razor blades, spinning at.
So when you're flying around the family ball, just beware.
Yeah, I'll be flying at a distance around the family.
Yeah, just make sure you're in an open area. And I used to go and fly down at a field in Slough or near Heathrow when I used to stay down there an awful lot. And there was an old boy there, and I said, you know, you're great. And he said, yeah, but I still keep three mistakes. And I said, what's that? He said, you always fly high enough that you can make three mistakes and not hit the ground. And that's probably one of the best bits of advice. The worst thing to do is to try and fly this next to anyone. I mean, it's you don't want to fly it next to anyone at all. And the problem you've got at GoBro is it's super wide, and you run that risk of getting way too close to a person to get the shot that you want. And actually, it's you put them in massive, massive danger, because if I'm not going to start saying, oh, you'll kill someone with it. I don't think you will kill someone with it, but you're going to lacerate someone really nastily with these. And if you look at the fast fly one here, I mean, I dread to think what the RPM on these when they're going is. But, I mean, this thing pulls through the air at 30 to 40 miles an hour. So it's not insignificant, the speeds that the props are doing.
There's loads of YouTube videos to watch to see all the bad things.
Yeah, I mean, the other one is the other one that we've got is the LiPo ones. So someone's put a battery on charge, and then they overcharge it, or they'll charge it too fast, and then it just ruptures and bursts into flames. It's horrific. Those are bad. I'm going to put one on charge and shoot it with an air rifle one day, see what happens. But they do explode. So always, always, always keep them in sight when you're charging.
Okay.
And that'll be Righty trying to dial in for the call, which we'll be having a bit.
Okay, so next step, build the frame then.
Yeah, build a frame, put your motors on, link your ESCs, they're obvious. If you've got ESCs, you're going to need to buy some clips, but you bought those, little 3mm banana clips. Get those in and get them connected up to your APM board. And what we'll do is next time we're together, we'll get Darren involved as well then, because he'll talk about connecting the battery, and we'll talk about the APM flight stuff and the PID files that you can adjust and calibration and that kind of thing before you get it flying. But you boys get some time-lapse up and enjoy building the frames.
Yeah.
See how far you can get, basically, and we'll come back next week and see what we're up to. Don't put the props on there. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Shadwell?
You can get me on Twitter as Paul Shadwell, PaulShadwell. Also on Facebook on the same name. That's it for now.
All right, mate. Jolly good. And Mr. Wheatley, looking gorgeous again.
Paul Wheatley. Oh, sorry.
Looking gorgeous there with the lighting and the green background.
I know. I need to do something about that so that I can actually put something behind me. But we worry about that. I only just got my studio lights up last night. You can find me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter, and you can find me on The Pocket Show and The Gamer Show on this very network.
Excellent. Good show this week, mate. Superb. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll put sponsors and that kind of stuff into the last one, but you know where we are. And if you want to join us with the Patreon thing, that would be great. If everyone that listened to the big show paid us $1, we can all do this professionally. The Daily Show would come back. photo show will come back. Just think about that. This has been the Drone Show. We'll be back next week with built frames ready to go, and Darren Griffin will be here to talk us through programming the board. Oh, you're building.